This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Your number is 877-217-5757. Send us an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. We begin with the print editor for the Wall Street Journal, Alex Martin, native of New Orleans, graduate of LSU, Manship Hall of Famer, 15 years at the Wall Street Journal. Prior to that, 16 years at Newsday and 8 years with the Times-Picayune and a two-time Pulitzer winner. Good morning to you, Alex.
Hey, Jim. Just to correct that, I was part of a large group of people on those Pulitzers. My name's not on any of them.
No, but you can claim it. Jim Featherston claimed his.
Yeah, I'm certainly happy to claim to be part of that group, yes.
Okay, there you go. And Alex and I go back a few years, about 40.
Mm-hmm.
You were my boss at one time.
Yeah, sports editor of the Daily Reveille, and I was the editor.
That's right, and what a cast of characters in the spring of 1981. You could write a book about those people, and leave me out, it'd still be a great book.
It was an interesting crew.
And three Pulitzer winners on that staff. Three. One, two, three. Alex Martin, James O'Byrne, and Russell, the late Russell Carolla. So, and let us not forget Lester Douay.
Lester Douay. It's hard to forget Lester. Went on to a career in political consulting, right?
Yes, indeed. A very good one. And you, of course, are at the center of the universe. New York is at any time, but it's been the epicenter for the coronavirus, and the President of the United States has not visited his hometown during this crisis. He's had more than 3 months to do so, and for whatever reason, he seems to have an aversion to Manhattan and New York City. What's going on?
You know, I don't know. It's probably just given the stresses that the city's under. I haven't been in the city in 3 months because I live in the suburbs and I've been working from home. I'm fortunate in that way. But the stresses that the city's under right now from the pandemic and more recently from the protests, but really from the pandemic, it would be, you know, it's always even in New York a thing when the president comes to town, it clogs up the center of town. It, you know, the police presence has to increase. So it's probably just been a good thing that he hasn't come for the delivery services and just, you know, all the added stresses on the municipal infrastructure in New York.
Well, he does go a lot of other places. And by the way, happy Juneteenth to our listening audience. And the president was scheduled to give an address in Tulsa, site of one of the worst racial massacres in U.S. history. And he prudently decided to move it back a day to June 20th. You and I were around in 1980 when Ronald Reagan opened his campaign for president in Philadelphia, Mississippi. Is this analogous to that?
I don't know if it's analogous to it or not. I mean, you know, for Reagan, you know, the Neshoba County Fair is always such a draw for politicians. You know, in 88, I saw, who was it? I guess it was George H.W. Bush there. That, you know, if you going there is a kind of thing, independent of the history of, you know, the slaying of the three civil rights workers in the city. You know, so that's one thing. As far as Tulsa is concerned, it is an interesting place to pick, right? I mean, it's a safe state for the president. But it also allows him to get a big crowd, get some energy, and get that out in the free media, which is something that has value to him. To, you know, and clearly he enjoys the energy of live audiences and the adoration of his supporters. It is odd, though, right? Even that in a place like the White House that has put out for the last 3 years, you know, st- statements, you know, about Juneteenth that no one kind of realized that June 19th would be a problematic date.
Well, officials expect as many as 100,000 people to gather in Tulsa. Police plan to have a large presence and assistance from the National Guard. Oklahoma, by the way, is one of a few states in which Trump carried every county. There's very little doubt that Donald Trump will win every county in Oklahoma again, just as Mitt Romney did against President Obama. This is the reddest of red states. And so it's a curious place for him to campaign. Obviously, he's going to get a rousing welcome. But at this point, with the election fewer than 140 days away, you would think he might be going to places where he is vulnerable. But he visited with one of your reporters, and that's on page A3 of the Wall Street Journal today. And he spent much of the interview criticizing former advisor John Bolton. Alex, you certainly put this paper together. It's quite a coup to get the president at any time.
Well, the president wanted to talk. What happened was on, the details of Bolton's book started leaking out. And the Wall Street Journal, had an agreement with the publisher of the book, Simon & Schuster, to run excerpts in Saturday's newspaper, but we were allowed under this agreement to put the excerpt out if people started reporting on the contents of the book early. And some people did. We put the excerpt out, as folks who followed the news know, Bolton was very critical of the president's and the way he conducted foreign affairs. Bolton alleged that the president put his own reelection and other personal needs ahead of our national interests in conversations with Xi Jinping and other foreign leaders, but mainly Xi. And so once that was out, and there were many, besides our excerpt, there were many stories about the book, because the book's out and about. And there was a review in New York Times. There were ADC, which has a sit-down with Bolton, interview with Bolton on Sunday night, also began putting out some snippets from that. So the president felt he wanted to talk, and so he asked to speak to us, and Mike Bender, who's a reporter in our Washington Bureau, with very little notice went over and talked to the president in the Oval Office. And it was a wide-ranging interview in which he talked about a lot of topics, but he did have he did want to try to discredit Bolton say he was kind of a crazy guy, frankly. He said, the best thing about John Bolton was that he was crazy, is what he said. So when you walked in a room with a foreign negotiating team, they always wondered, gee, is Bolton going to launch a war? And so that was the president saying that. And so, it followed a pattern of the president having less than complimentary things to say about people he had hired and then who broke with him. Some who broke with him and said, criticized him like Bolton did, and some who had even kept their mouths shut, like John Kelly or Mattis.
Well, it's a fascinating world in which we live, and of course, the president is consulting with his legal team about the Bolton book and trying to keep it from being published. It's actually been printed, but he doesn't want it out and about, even though many media people have already read copies. But is this somewhat similar to the Pentagon Papers, potentially?
I mean, Floyd Abrams has argued that. It's a little different, right? Because with the Pentagon Papers, there were physically papers. So a thing was removed from government control and given to two news organizations who then printed it. This one is, a guy was sitting in a room, and he was taking really good notes, and it's been through pre-publication review, and there were only minor redactions, and now the president is trying to claim that everything he says to one of his advisors is classified. that's kind of a tough standard. And another difficult proposition for the president is that he says that in tweets he said that Bolton's a liar, everything's all these are lies. Well, if something's classified, it generally it has to be true, right? Mm-hmm. So is it a lie or is it true and classified? So that's part of the discussion that's going on around in the background, but in the courthouse, it's more practical thing where Bolton and his people are saying, hey, the book's already out.
We'll talk more with Alex Martin. Facebook, by the way, is taking down posts and ads for the president's reelection campaign, saying the ads violated the social media giant's policy against organized hate. 877-217-5757, your number, back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. We're with Alex Martin, New Orleanian, LSU graduate, Holy Cross High School graduate in New Orleans, and print editor of the Wall Street Journal, one of the great journalistic entities in the world, and it has survived in austere times in the print world. And Alex, you are in the center of the universe with a newspaper that is well-regarded, and it is owned by Rupert Murdoch, of course, but the editorial page is much different than the page that you're responsible for, the pages. And the Wall Street Journal is, I think, given a just credit for writing it down the middle as much as that can be done. And the subscription rate has been good, hasn't it?
Well, you know, digitally we're growing. We're shrinking. We're shrinking like every other newspaper in the physical newspaper. Up until a few prior to the pandemic, we circulated about 1 million copies a day of the Wall Street Journal, the physical newspaper. But that number has come down during the pandemic, and you know, we have to figure out where that number is going to be. It's true that newspaper, like all newspapers, it's going to find some level where it either is profitable and we can do it, or it's not profitable and we're going to have to become a fully digital news organization. The last few years, most of what we've, probably the last 2 or 3 years really intently, we've made the digital delivery of news our primary focus. And so one of my jobs as the chief print editor is to try to lead the newspaper and integrate it with that larger push to make us a more digitally focused news organization. That has its complications, but I also think we've done a really nice job of keeping the newspaper fresh and relevant and interesting for the quite sizable number of people still enjoy getting their news in a curated physical form.
Well, when you were running the ship at the Reveille, there were many late nights in Tiger Stadium with Mike Konvicka getting out a newspaper. It was a laborious task in those days. Still is, but in a much different way, in a much more efficient way. But how has that changed working from home?
Well, one of the things is, you know, the group of people, it's probably about 20 of us, who put together the physical newspaper are located all on the sixth floor of 1211 Sixth Avenue in Manhattan. That's the new part of Rockefeller Center. And, you know, if I've got a question or I have a problem or I think something's great, I can stand up, turn around and yell, which is one of my favorites, or take, you know, 15 paces and be right next to somebody and talk to them about what we're doing. So now we're scattered across three states. We have people in, four states. We have people in northeastern Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, at least three of the five boroughs in New York, Long Island, a couple of me and a couple other people, and some people in upstate New York, and I think at least one in Connecticut. So we're kind of, you know, doing everything either by Slack, the communications app, or email, which is a little bit slower, or lots of phone calls. There's a hell of a lot of video meetings. You know, we don't use Zoom, but it's like Zoom, you know, Google mm-hmm. Hangout. So there's a lot of time. You have to schedule time to talk, whereas when you're all together, you can just bump into people. You can insinuate yourself in a conversation. You can overhear things that are going on. And without, you know, a coverage plan that are taking shape, without being in the same room, that requires a lot more effort. And then, of course, at the end of the day, if everybody is on their own Wi-Fi network at home, if somebody's Wi-Fi crashes and he or she happens to be the person who is doing something key at that moment on deadline, it can really make the day not fun.
All right. Well, at 1211 6th Avenue, you're in the same headquarters as Fox News. Do you and Sean Hannity high-five on the elevator on a regular basis?
I don't think. I've seen many of the Fox folks around, but Sean I haven't seen. I really? Get to ride the elevator one day with Roger Ailes, though. He and a bodyguard, and the bodyguard was a large man, and he carried Ailes's satchel for him.
And Ailes, as we know, was a large man, too. Now, speaking of large, and this is from the Wall Street Journal, provided me by a listener, Tracy at the Capitol, the Beverly Hills TV show, The Mansion, it was bought for $150 million, apparently the most expensive home sale in the United States history, by Lachlan Murdoch, who is, he's like the big guy now with the mm-hmm. Murdoch media empire. $150 million for the... for the house that Jethro Bodine used to hold court in.
I wonder if the cement pond is still there.
Yeah, and the pot passers, too. 877-217-5757. David in Atlanta. David, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'd like to request for your guests' opinion regarding President Trump has constantly said that the New York Times is a failing newspaper, when in fact, their earnings and share prices probably have never been better. And when President Trump tries to intimidate CNN for running a legitimate poll, sending a lawyer to tell them to cease and desist, what do you think about the state of the president's mentality? Or does he really believe that he has some type of dictatorial power?
All right, Alex Martin. The president has been known to intimidate his adversaries, and that includes many in the media, of course. What about the way he does business?
Well, I don't do opinion. So that's the first thing. I'm not going to offer an opinion. What I'm going to say is that all politicians attempt to work the press. The way he attempts to work the press is unlike in public, and the many ways he tries to bring pressure to bear is unlike anything that I've experienced in my career. You know, there, of course, are antecedents in history. You know, Huey Long started his own newspaper, the Louisiana Progress, because he didn't feel like he was getting a fair shake from the Times pick on you, as Earl used to call it, and others, you know, and other papers in the state. So, you know, there's a history of that kind of thing. Now, suing over a poll, this whole notion of unskewed poll, you know, unskewing polls, that's discredited. It's silly. It's, you know, polls are polls. They have their flaws and their strengths. But that was that the notion of threatening to sue over a poll is a bit out there. But again, I don't see it so much as these kinds of things. Do people believe it when they do it, or are they merely trying to work the ref? I never know. And I don't know with him. Now, the thing about the New York Times, New York Times is doing great, you know, currently. So that is demonstrably not correct.
And another New Orleanian in charge at the New York Times. So,
Dean Baquet, who
Worked with you?
Really, terrific guy and smart and sober and, again, their newspaper, their news organization isn't quite run like ours, but it's credible and they do a good job and they're a worthy competitor. We do a better job.
And 877-217-5757 is your number, and we have some listeners online who have gone to talk at talklouisiana.org. We'll spend a few more minutes with Alex Martin, print editor for the Wall Street Journal. He's done Louisiana proud with his work in New York City, first at Newsday, where he was large and in charge for 16 years, and now 15 years at the Wall Street Journal. That's 31 years in the Big Apple, and we'll talk with him about the crazy world we're in now when we return after this pause for the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle is producing, and in just a few minutes, we'll hear from the legendary law professor at LSU, recently retired, Paul Beyer, 48 years at the old law school, and he has a book that he is here to showcase, and we'll get his take on some Supreme Court decisions. We're also talking in our remaining time with Alex Martin, the print editor for the Wall Street Journal, who many years ago was at the LSU Reveille 40 years ago, and got a note from our friend Lester Douay saying, "What a treat to be saluted by the best Reveille sports editor and editor I ever worked with." And thanks to Lester for listening and commenting. And another colleague from those days, asking to remain nameless, says that I didn't mention that Bill Davis, frontman for Dash Riprock, was part of our staff in the spring of 81. And also Lisa Shelp Martin, the wife of Alex Martin. She was quite a reporter in her day.
She won the reporting award at the Reveille.
And you did well?
I out-kicked my coverage, yeah.
Yeah. How many years have you been together now?
We got married in December of 81, so...
That's right. I was there. So you're coming up on 39 right years. I remember St. Albans Church there.
That's correct.
Next to the Catholic Center, yeah. But the president, as we segue to Professor Beyer here in a few moments, he's had some unusually harsh words from a U.S. president for the Supreme Court of the United States, mm-hmm. which is dominated by conservatives. They hold the majority, but he's not mm-hmm. liking their decisions this week a lot. What's going on?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what's going on because, obviously, look, he doesn't like the decisions. Both of them are, I mean, the Gorsuch decision probably stung the worst since he wrote it, and both Gorsuch and Roberts joined it, but... you know, the president personalizes things, and he really he's hung his hat on a lot of his campaign on the ability to stock the judiciary with, the kinds of judges that conservatives would like. And this has been especially his calling card with evangelical Christians who have remained steadfast in support for him, even when there have been accusations in the president's personal life that would generally lose support among that group. So clearly he was angry about it, and he did what he does, which is lash out. But also, I think the question is there also a calculation? There is a calculation to drive home the idea that, look, I've put a whole bunch of judges in here. I think the number's like, is it 200 federal judges? I think he's gotten approved. It's some crazy number. And it's just large as hell. And so you keep me around for another 4 years and, you know, we can get the number right, you know, so that, you know, we have more Alitos and Thomases and fewer Roberts. So I think that is there a calculation to that? Maybe.
Yeah. Well,
It's hard to know. It's certainly a powerful issue for both sides, the Supreme Court.
And as voters prepare to go to the polls in a few months. The Supreme Court, the conservative majority, is likely to stay for a while unless one of the justices dies. But the two Clinton appointees, Ginsburg mm-hmm. and Breyer, are well into their 80s. Ginsburg's mm-hmm. health problems are well known. So it would seem that those two will most likely not last another 4 years, which would mean if President Trump's reelected, he would have a 7-2 majority on the court, which means he could afford to lose one or two on these cases and still emerge victorious. It's a big, big part of the fabric of this year's election.
Mm-hmm. Very definitely. I mean, it was 4 years ago. It certainly is. It's probably more so now.
Alex, it's always good to talk with you. Keep up your great work in New York City, Wall Street Journal, and we'll be calling again. Hopefully we'll hear from you before the election. Thank you, Alex.
All right, Jim.
Take care.
See you soon. Happy to be here.